Accession number 30133, Reel 4.
This is Mr. Mason, Reel 4. Yes, I was going to ask you just before you move away from packing, because I know it's something that you just did because it was your job and you took it for granted. But there'll be people who are very interested in how you actually managed in the days before bubble wrap and the sort of expanding plastics and things that they used.
What we did, there were wooden cases, and we put wooden button in the two side, and then we screwed the panel in, because they had some holes that you would screw the panel in into the actual thing. So we screwed that in, so it wasn't movable.
And did you use any sort of wadding or padding when you
were doing that? because it wouldn't move about, you see.
Right. So you didn't need to sort of stuff it with sawdust or something like that.
No.
And generally packing materials would be what?
Well, they had foam rubber. Could use that. Or they had a machine that really, it is foam, and then you put the equipment in, and the foam forms around it, the shape of the equipment.
And are there specific techniques that you have to use when you're packing certain things? If you're packing glass, for example.
Well, the things like glass would be in the actual panel itself, so that would be protected. So long as it's not moving about.
Are there any things you remember having real difficulties devising some sort of safe packaging for them?
Well, no, not really, because they were all standard sizes. This is the panel. This one thing that you wouldn't have, it's a problem with, say, a fuse went in one panel, you just took the whole thing out.
So as things were becoming more and more standardised, it was making your life a lot easier, basically.
Yes.
The other thing I was going to ask as well, while we're on the technical questions, again, things like fuel supply, which again, you're taking for granted that everybody just, well, it's just fuel supply, I just did this and that, I just did that. But you obviously had to go through a lot of training programs to do it properly.
So
what sort of things were they teaching you to do?
Well, water and fuel. Now the water sinks at the bottom. So we have a tape that goes down, and then at the end of this tape is a metal thing, and you put water finding paste on it, and then if there's water in the tank, it comes up pink. Again, you have what they call paste. It's a brownish paste, and then you put it at the top, and petrol, things like gasoline, it evaporates so quickly that you can't read the bit. But if you put this paste on the tape, it cuts. You see where the petrol is. Out in Christmas Island, the Americans, when they were doing this recovery for Dome School, they sent a tanker full of fuel, and we had to store it in our tank. But this tank that they gave them to put the fuel in, it's got rubber seals. It's above ground, and it hadn't been used for quite a few months, so all the rubber seal was straight, and the fuel was just seeping off the side of this. And myself and an army sergeant, we had to be out there all night transferring the fuel from one tank to another. Mark you, the commander or group cap, that's squadron leader, he brought his cap full of beer while he was there. It was just leaking all the petrol.
How did you transfer it? You had proper pumping equipment?
Well, all the tanks are connected to each other. So you can pump from one tank to another.
But there was there wasn't enough seepage to have caused an accident or anything.
Well, no, it was just, and it was sandy as well, so it was just going in the sand.
There must have been lots of safety features that you were told about, like don't do this, and don't obviously don't have a cigarette if you're
No, 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 no. We have lightning conductor as well. Yeah.
Did they give you any protective equipment to wear? Or?
No, not really. It's only when you're handling things like locks, liquid oxygen, that you have protective gear.
What did they give you?
Well, you have the gloves and special clothing.
Mm-hmm. And was it sort of like an overalls or an apron?
No, overalls.
Mm-hmm. But you never had face masks or visors or anything like that?
No, because... you should do, but because Lux, if you put your finger in it, it just breaks off. That's what we when I was on the course at Shell, we used Lux to see what fuel freezes, what temperature it freezes.
Right, so you were being taught about the temperatures, don't let it go below or don't let it go above, and that sort of thing.
Yes.
And is it something like an empty tank is more dangerous than a full tank?
Yes, because it would spark. Filled with sparks and go. When I was out in Cyprus, I was on down the tank farm. We had, is it four big tanks at the front that holds a gallon of fuel each, and then we had another four smaller ones at the back. And we used to get tankers coming in the sea, and we had underground pipe from the sea to the tanks, and we used to pump them. And we had what they call an Evershed meter. You'd hear the meter ticking over, but it wasn't accurate, so I had to go out and dip the tank every hour and I was pumping.
And how long would these things take to fill up?
Well, the tanker normally spend about 2 days there. Yeah.
And you never had any spillages or anything like that? So never any big accidents?
Yes, I had. In fact, we had a valve open and all the petrol went into the sea. And there was an aircraft flying over in Cyprus and they reported this. And it was, thousands of gallons going in the sea. Oh, they had me up for the but really, it wasn't my fault alone.
And what sort of measures did they take when something like that happened? Could they actually do anything? Or?
Well, it could be court-martial or, but then all I had was what they call a formal warning.
They didn't make you go and try and clear it all up or anything?
Oh, no, it was in the sea. It was all in the sea.
So it just dispersed, it didn't come back onto shore or anything?
Yeah. Yeah, that was my one big
thing. I mean, if things can go wrong with fuel, obviously that was you got away with quite a good one.
If there was an accident in an aircraft, the last place that they refuel, that tank is frozen until they can clear it. They found that nothing was wrong with the fuel. We used to get the fuel from the ship in tons. We'd send it up to the airfield in gallons, and I'd put it on the aircraft in pounds.
So you had to have quite a mathematical brain as well, apart
from yes, especially we had to do the dips in the morning and work it out, and the calculating machine then was one of these yachts to wind around. You wind around for adding and run backward for subtract. it was a job to really get to know this thing, how it works.
So did you find it was quicker just to do sort of mental maths rather than...
Well, we're talking about thousands, you know.
You had to use it, otherwise.
While I was out there as well, we had tornado. Three tornadoes hit Cyprus. Two came across the tank field, and they had a metal walkway about half inch thick, and it just bent the metal like that. Somebody got killed out there, one day, a civilian working on the camp, but it went through a petrol station, civilian one. I saw it, you know, in my office. I saw this thing coming across the sea. Yeah, yeah. The first time I've ever seen that. Not at all.
You had no warning before they arrived.
No.
So did you have any sort of I don't know, strategy to deal with tornadoes?
No, I just took off and went to my car and drove back up to the main camp.
So yeah, no saving any of the paperwork then, it's just like, So there were three in the space of a few months or?
No, in the same day.
Same day?
Mm. You saw them coming across the water, you know, and you know, it's a spout of water coming across. And it hits just a narrow area, not a wide area. Just
so I suppose it does more concentrated damage?
Mm.
Yes, I sort of sidetracked you, didn't I? Because I got you talking about the technical things to do with the fuel supply. But I think we got as far as the early 60s. And I can't remember whether we went in Lincolnshire, Yorkshire.
Driffield, yeah. No, I went to Nocton Hall from there.
That was the hospital supply unit. And then you were up to...
Finningley. There was the V bombers up there, and they used to be plugged in to the electrical system, and they had Dawn till Dusk, Dusk till Dawn, ready for any Russian strike to take off. The pilot used to be actually sat in the cockpit waiting to go off.
How long did they sit there for at one stretch? How long did they have to stay
from dawn till dusk till dawn.
And what did they do all that time?
They just sat there waiting for something to
well.
Yes.
But did you have to go out and take them sort of refreshments or?
Well, I suppose they did get things sent to them, yeah, but they were actually in the aircraft. And while I was at Finningley, John F. Kennedy got shot. I remember exactly where I was in that day.
And were you with the Americans at that point, or was this just...
No, it was just our air.
But fairly shortly afterwards, I think you were back in Aden.
Aden, yes.
You stayed a bit longer this time.
Yes, I did a full tour out there. Oh, right. Forecast.
You can probably get the sound effects for this on the recording as well, if you can hear it. It's quite heavy rain. Peter, that didn't start when we were talking about the tornado.
Yes. Yeah.
So, what were you doing when you were in Aden this time? Because I think I put you down as doing. You were out there for a couple of years.
Yes, 2 years in Aden. Yes, I was on a squadron, working on a squadron of Valletta aircraft. I was their storekeeper.
How was Aden at this time?
It was all right first of all, but then the trouble started, and then the squadrons moved down to Fayed, but I didn't go down to Fayed. I stayed at Comax. Yes, I stayed. Yes, I stayed at Comac. So.
Did the troubles actually start to affect you at all?
Well, we weren't allowed to go out on our own because we probably get shot or something like that. And they were throwing grenades in bars and stuff like that. I went to visit a friend down in Marla, and we heard these two bangs went off, and then it was a bar that the service people used to drink in, and someone had thrown two grenades in, and then it started from that. But then there's a mountain out there called Shamshan. And they say, once you've climbed that, you never go back to Aden again. So I made sure I climbed it twice.
And have you been back?
No. No.
So I get the impression that you didn't have a brilliant time.
No, not in Aden. There wasn't anything, just some rock, yeah. And they had this war going off in the Yemen, In fact, that's what I got a medal for, that as well. Got a bar to it. Because you had the RAF bombing the people. And they would... they had SAS people that went in there, and an officer, they beheaded him, and came back to brought the body back to the hospital. They captured a wife of warrant officer as well, as some airmen, and they wanted to. She said, "Oh, I'm a woman," and they said, We don't know if you're on, because she was in slacks, and she had to drop make sure that she was a woman, and then they let her go. But they kept the men there for some time. But they did drop a lot of bombs out there. Brought back pictures of it, but it wasn't shown to everyone, just the senior officers.
So it was quite a tense time while you were out there.
Yes it was.
And were you taking extra precautions actually on base?
Oh yeah.
What sort of things did you have to do or not do?
Well, you can sort of go out to places that are out of bounds, you know. Mm-hmm. And in fact, what the Arabs wanted was the arms. They would shoot people and take their arms, the weapons away. We had some places down in the town. Well, those were all closed and everything was moved back onto the base. I was glad to get away from there. Yeah. Because we when I was out there, we used to go to Kenya for recreation, you know, and we used to get fruit and things from Kenya. It was a bomber aircraft that went, but they had panniers where the bomb goes, and then we'd go to Kenya and get all this fruit and put it in the panniers and fly back. And I went on leave to Kenya, Mombasa.
What was your impression of
Mombasa? Well, it was more like that, because the fruits and everything, like it was in Jamaica, they're on the same climate there. Yeah. Oh, it was quite nice. Yeah. Nice and green. I went to the wildlife park and all that. The lions and tigers and, yeah.
That's quite a place to go on leave, really.
Mm. Yes.
And how long would you go for at a stretch? For a couple of days or?
No, when we went when I went as crew, we spent 2 or 3 days there. But when I went on holiday, I think I spent 2 weeks there. Because that was the only place you could go on holiday, you know. Because there wasn't much in aid.
I suppose if you were restricted to base practically all the time you were there. Mm. That must have been quite claustrophobic.
Well, it was a big base spread out, and we had most things that we wanted on the station anyway.
But as you say, you were quite glad to get away from it.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Yes, flew back.
How did they fly you back? In some comfort or?
No, RAF aircraft. In fact, I had, because when a squadron commander is posting back to UK, then they give him a free trip to wherever he wants to go. And this time the officer, he wanted to come back to the UK because he wanted to bring some of his stuff back, and I was on the trip, but I stopped off in Gibraltar. Mm-hmm. Until they came back, you know. I enjoyed it in Gibraltar.
So what were you getting up to in Gibraltar then?
Ooh, we went bars and I tried to climb the where the apes were, but it was such a long walk, I gave it up in the end. No, I just, because I know I was coming back to UK, but I mean, I wanted to stop in Gibraltar, so I just say, I'll wait until you come back, and yeah. And it was just as well, you know, because in fact they had the dinghy scare coming back, the aircraft. They thought they were going to ditch.
So you missed out on that.
Mm. Eventually, it was okay, but it was scare. They had a scare on. And I went to Jamaica on a training trip, we're supposed to go for 7 days, and we eventually stayed 14 days out there, because everywhere the aircraft went, we, first of all, we stayed, stopped in the Azores, and we bought beer and spirit, and then we went to Nassau, and the skipper phoned ahead, and they were having a rum punch party, and they said, "Oh, we'll keep it going until you get there." We got there, and we went to the hotel, and we got this rum punch party, and then the next leg was Jamaica, but they were having so much fun that they're throwing people in the swimming pool at Nassau after all this rum punch. And then when we on the next leg back, we had all these underwear shredded on the aircraft online drying because and then we went to Jamaica, and I phoned my family, and they came to pick me up because it was about 50 miles from the aircraft. And then the next day I went back to Kingston, and they're supposed to take off, and the aircraft took off, and the navigator came to me and said, "George, we're going back." Yeah, we went back to Kingston. They're having an oil leak, so I had to wait until my brother got to Port Moray, and then I said, "Can you come and pick me up again?" Well, we eventually took off the next day, and there was some English sailor, or somebody top rank, and his son got lost in a dinghy. And the skipper phoned to say, "Well, can we stop and help search for this chap?" Well, they said, "No, we have to come back." And we were supposed to stop in Bermuda to refuel, but when we got there, there was a storm, and we had to take the trip from Jamaica straight on to Fairford. When we got there, we were just on fumes, really, because we couldn't refuel, and they didn't. They were a bit anti us because we spent 14 days when we should have spent 7. This is on Hercules.
So it wasn't a particularly warm welcome home then?
Well, no, because the other crews, they had to do the jobs that this crew should have done, you see.
Forgot where we are now because with all the rum punches. Yes. We're back at Fairford,
uh-huh.
And you're there for a short stretch before you're off again to Cyprus.
Cyprus, yes.
And this time you're in Cyprus for
69. Yeah. 3 years.
It's a good stretch.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like Cyprus? Get on with it, okay?
Yes, I enjoy them. I lived in the outside of the camp in private hiring. I was married then, so yeah. Hyacinth was working as a nurse in the medical center. And we used to go up into through this mountain to have picnic. Lots of fish, all different type of fish. And of course they had the wine festival again there. And I could, they grew bananas out there, so I used to go and buy bananas. And the fruit was really lovely. I had four vines in the the house that we rented, so we had lots and lots of grape.
So the standard of living was so much better than...
Oh yes.
It's going from Fairford straight out to
Salford. What would happen? The first thing you used to do if you visit a friend, they would offer you a rum and coke. You know. Well, one Christmas, I went around to a friend. I drove the car, and while I was inside, someone said, "George, somebody's driving away your car." And what had happened? My friend got fed up. She had down with his moped, and she drove the moped and took the car. And then I said, "Well, we'll play our trick on her." And I took the moped and went to another chap's friend and left it there. So somebody dropped me home now, and then when I got home, he said, "Where's the bike?" I said, "What bike?" "Oh, seeing a bike." This went on for a few days, you know, and she thought the bike was stolen. I tried making wine out there with all this grape, but it was too strong, so I had to use it to light my kebab fire.
So, yeah, again, were you working in supply at this time?
Yes.
And any particular speciality?
No, fuel. I was on fuel side.
So it sounds like Cyprus was quite a good posting to have.
It's the best one, really. Everybody trying to get on the Cyprus thing, because even now they have the aircraft goes out at Christmas and they call it the fruit run. It brings back all these oranges and, you know, come to Bryce.
So it must have been quite a wrench to leave, and you had to come back to Bryce Norton. It must have been quite hard.
Well, Danny's was Casivac when she was born. She had water on the brain, so she had just Casivac to Great Ormond Street to have an operation, and then she came back and she was all right. But all that sort of, you know, well, they want to come back anyway. But we had a good tour out in Cyprus, living in civilian accommodation and all that.
And I've got here your last tour was when you came back with Rise.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. You have a choice to apply for a last tour of duty, and they name your thing, and you sometimes lucky you get it. I was on JATE, which is joint. It's again, that is an army. We had a group captain, RAF, station commander. Then we had Major on second in command. It was a mixture of Air Force and Army and Navy. What they did was any new equipment that comes in to the service, they work on the how it's packed and how you can transport it on an aircraft. It's all worked out. They have all various trades, artists, you know, and it's all worked out how. Because they things like they drop vehicles by parachute. In fact, once it went wrong, and they dropped this Land Rover by parachute, and it went right down the ground. They couldn't get it out. But then, I've actually gone up with the aircraft when they these things are shooting out. It's got a parachute, and they open the parachute and it pulls the equipment out. When you feel the aircraft goes up when it goes down, you know, the people who handle this, they're all strapped in, because they sometimes you probably drop out through the back, you know. So I was interested in that, until they said my rank was too high for me to be on that, so they sent me to actual Bryce Norton in the SCAF, doing all paperwork.
Just going to switch over on the old. Okay. So we're just over on this one, sir. So.